Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 24. Coming at you to continue our positional recaps of the 2022 season. This time going to the middle infield, second base, and shortstop. Talk a little LCS action to have some fun with that as well, and much, much more. You can find myself on Twitter at BDintric, and my co-host is always on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, man?
We are doing forecaster. 100% of the time, 99% of the time, we are doing First Pitch Arizona prep. We are doing podcasts. We are doing a draft. We are doing what else am I doing? We got my XFL keeper deadline this weekend. So, like I said before, this is the busiest time of year, and it is. And honestly, man, I wouldn't have it any other way. It's a ton of fun.
It's fun. Like I started with the Gaining the Edge guys, we're starting to kind of plan our November push. And I'm like all of a sudden kind of getting a little excited again to get back into it after a little breather here. And I got my black book assignment for the year. So okay. It's going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, I'll be jumping in the waters with you here in a minute to get going here. First Pitch is going to be awesome, as I think people are probably sick of us saying over and over again, but we say it for a reason, because it is
2 weeks.
Yep. It's so close. I literally looked at my calendar because, you know, I have to do certain scheduling things in my life now. And I was looking at it the other day, and I'm like, oh man, it's right around the corner. This is great. Like, it's so close.
Almost.
So,
you pull up the weather app on the phone and yep. that 10th day, it's starting to get there.
It's getting close. So it's going to be a blast. Look forward to seeing whoever can make it out there. It's going to be a great time for the, you know, 4 days or whatever we are in Arizona, which is always a great place to be in the fall/winter time of the year. But all right, before we get into our second base shortstop recap, comparing ADPs with the Razzball Player Rater finishes, which was very fun and productive for first base and third base, let's talk a little postseason. Last time we talked, they were wrapping up the wild card rounds. We got talked a little divisional action. Well, the divisional rounds wrapped up. The Yankees took down the Guardians, unfortunately. That was a rough one to stomach for some of us. But the Astros and the Mariners, that was a series of all series, like literally a couple bounces from a completely different outcome. And then you have the National League, that the 5-6 seeds both made the LCS for the first time, because it's the first time we have a 5-6 seed. And Fernando Tatis Jr. might not miss most of the season now. So what are your thoughts on this, the division series? And, you know, we have Astros up 1-0 and the Phillies Padres tied at 1.
And that Tatis thing, man, that's probably the biggest fantasy takeaway of this postseason is, I guess the Padres won today, so they're guaranteed to go in 5 in the NLCS. So 5 fewer games of Tatis for next year. It's been the Mariner series was rough. That was a tough one. Super entertaining. Yordan Alvarez, just, you know, talent. I know there's a lot of kind of nitpicking on why go Robbie Ray against Yordan Alvarez in the ninth and you know, all this, you know, should have pitched this guy, that guy. It's just Houston was the better team. But it was a fantastic series. Really every series has been super entertaining. And to me, at least, like, that's, I don't know. I, that's what I like to see in the postseason. There's been a lot of talk back and forth about the new format and the best teams not being there and that sort of thing. But I think it's almost just like check your expectations with these postseason tournaments. In pretty much any sport, the best team more often than not does not win their postseason tournament. It's just kind of weird that baseball's getting that rap this year. I guess it's because of LA.
Was there a high seed in the National League complaining about something, Ryan? I missed that. I thought it was a great outcome in that series. Did I miss something? Was someone complaining?
You're a little biased, but yes, yeah, very good outcome for you.
I thought it was a great series. Like, the Padres played amazing baseball.
It's just, I don't know. It's postseasons are, and I've always thought this way, and I've said this on the show before, get to the postseason, it's a crapshoot. It's always been that way. I think if we just kind of relax, take in these moments, these upsets, they're fantastic to watch, and take the postseason for what it's worth. It's entertaining as heck, and it's been great. So, I'm dialed in, man. I'm personally rooting for the Padres or the Phillies. I'm still a little hurt from the Astros series, so I'll go with the NL and see where we get.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how the NL plays out, because I love like those games in Philadelphia. I would have wanted to be in that crowd. That was just an atmosphere of all atmospheres. We know Philly's got some fans. Like, we know football, baseball, they got fans. But that place was insane. And for good reasons, great games, great comebacks. Like, but it was just electric. And that's what I love about the postseason, especially for teams. Like, they haven't been there in like 11 or 12 years. So It just shows, like, the excitement that you can get. The Mariners was rocking, of course, for good reasons. And they'll be back very soon, I think. I wouldn't be too worried about that when they got quite the core set up there. But, like, I'm pulling for the Phillies because I just want to keep seeing that run take place. I love seeing Harper dominate because – I'm a Harper fan. I get annoyed that people think he's overpaid and overreacted. There's a big spectrum of people that think that. And it always makes me laugh because I think he's that good. Like, I tweeted about it. I was sitting at a sports bar on Monday night right before Harper went deep. And the at-bat before that is when he smoked one and Cronenworth was shifting and dove and, like, it would have driven a run, if all this stuff. And this guy, this Phillies fan, I said, man, Harper's having a great postseason. He's hitting everything hard. He's all, yeah, he's just hitting it hard. He's not doing anything. I was like, he had three home runs hitting 426 coming into that at bat. Nothing. And then he goes deep his next at bat. And I'm like, you Phillies fans, absolutely. I tell you, this is amazing. So, fickle, and then Schwarber's like 800-foot homer. So,
yeah. The formula is working. Astros. I mean, I picked the Phillies to go to the NLCS just because of Nola and Wheeler. With them, it's going to, I mean, that bullpen, man, how long can it hold together? Like, I thought, we're recording Wednesday night. I thought Wednesday's game two, thought they had it in the bag with Aaron Nola and a four run lead. But, I know Nola gave up a fair share of that, but man, I don't know if that bullpen can hold it together. And meanwhile, San Diego's bullpen has been nailed. So, and that was a perceived weakness. So just interesting. Josh Hader's doing his thing at the back of the, in the ninth, he's back. Ryan Pressly looked fantastic tonight. Again, not taking away too much of this stuff, but, for next year, but, just really good baseball. This has honestly been one of my favorite, postseason so far. There's just been a lot of moments, a lot of new teams, a lot of upsets. Mm-hmm. It's been great. So let's hope for as much baseball as possible, especially World Series game 6 and 7 in that first pitch. That would just be amazing.
Didn't you happen to draft Ryan Pressly? Wasn't that your closer by chance?
I did. I'm rooting for him.
Just checking.
Fourth round Ryan Pressly in our degenerate draft and hold. That pick was made back in August. So,
I won't keep like belaboring the games because people probably don't care about all our thoughts on the games, but it was funny with tonight's Yankees game because they struck out, I think, like 17 times or something, like crazy number. And seven of those were between Carpenter and Donaldson in the middle of the order. And that was with four of those at bats were with runners in scoring position. The only times all game the Yankees had runners in scoring position. I'm just laughing. Like, it's just,
well, I think Stanton and Judge were only one strikeout of the 17. So,
yep.
It's actually weird. Just given times, I've watched the fewest of the Yankees in any team. Most of their games are on at like 4 our time. And that's no bueno time for me. It's either during the day when I've got it on in the background or those West Coast night games.
For sure, for sure. But we'll talk more about it next week. Probably have some World Series ideas by then. Maybe even starting the World Series. We'll see. So we'll have some fun to break down there. Hopefully we'll have some good series, as you said, until then. And I think we will. I think we're going to have some dandies, as they would say. But let's get into it. We have second base. We have shortstop. We did first base, third base last week. And for those keeping track at home, we're using ADP from Main Events towards the end of draft season, comparing it to the finishing Razzball player rater rankings, and basically seeing, did these picks pan out and how did it work? And we remember with first base and third base, extremely top heavy. If you took one early, you benefited. If you didn't, you had to do some getting lucky as the draft went on. Just first glance, a little different at these positions, but we already know that especially shortstop is an extremely deep position, which we've known for a long, long time. So that helps a lot before we even break that down. But let's get into second base, Ryan, and it's a crazy position, and obviously this guy is eligible both, so he will top both positions, but I know most of us had Trey Turner as our number one overall last year. He went number one overall last year, and he was the number one second baseman, and I'll say number one shortstop while we're at it. Like, he earned every bit of that, so I'm just going to stop there for a second so we can talk about Trey Turner, but he did it again, and he's done it time and time again. He performs at an elite level at a top pick, and it's hard to see anybody but Trey Turner still being number one to me for the time being.
I agree with you. I think Trey Turner is the number one overall pick next year. I mean, he is a free agent, so let's see where he goes there. One thing with Trey Turner that's just kind of interesting, dude had, he had 100 RBI. I normally think crazy. Of, yeah, I mean, that's, I know a lot Dodger fueled, hitting second mostly behind Mookie Betts, so the runs were there, but the RBI were absolutely there. I think the counting stats, if he does not stay in LA, are going to take a hit, but I don't think it's enough to knock Trey Turner from number one overall. I believe Rob Silver tweeted this out earlier today. Trey Turner is one of two guys to finish in the top 15 each of the last five seasons. And the other one is Freddie Freeman.
J-Ram. Oh, Freeman.
No, Freddie Freeman. J-Ram, four out of the last five seasons, along with Machado, your boy Bryce Harper, Mookie Betts. But Trey Turner and Freddie Freeman are the two guys who finished top 15 each of the last five seasons. So, yeah.
And
Number one for me.
And I agree that the landing spot obviously will have an impact on certain things, but I also think a different team could actually increase the stolen bases. He only had 27 steals because, yeah, you know, hitting second there, he's driving in Mookie. He had all these big bats behind him. It felt like he wasn't running as much as he used to just because the need wasn't there with the Dodgers, but I could be overthinking it.
HQ, we use stolen base opportunity metric, just kind of estimates when you're on first, what percentage of the time do you run? Typically, Trey Turner's been low mid 20% and this year 17%. So he definitely did not run as much. Didn't need to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. So, he didn't need to, but you know, going to a different team, we could see that spike again, and that could be quite interesting. All right, now we go farther down the list. You had Ozzie Albies, 17th off the board, 35th, because obviously missed a lot of the season with an injury, and we will talk about him more. But then Trevor Story, 17th on the player radar. Whit Merrifield, even though it was a bad season, still finished 15th at second base. So, like, he didn't really help you, but he didn't crush you. So this is the guy we've been joking about in our degenerate draft because he just keeps staying on the board. It's tough to take Whit Merrifield, especially not knowing where he's going to play and all these scenarios, but he still at least kind of produced for you as the season went on.
Yeah, on the NFBC platform, they haven't and shouldn't yet because it's still in the postseason. They have not rolled the site forward to 2023 yet, Slacker. So the draft board is ordered by ADP, and if you time out, which you almost did, Bubba, last night, saved you with a last minute text. That's right. Yes. You get the Whit Merrifield. So he's that kind of guy right now who typically during draft season, it's the guy who gets hurt in February. ADP's already up there, and if you time out, you get him. But now it's Whit Merrifield and Javi Baez is the second one because
he's sitting there. Yeah,
because it's by last year ADP. Go ahead.
No, sorry. I was going to move on, but you got more to say. Go for it.
No, I was just going to. You brought up like Merrifield not being a total disaster, and even Trevor Story too. Like I had the impression that they were just like complete duds, and yes, very bad seasons from both of them. but finished 15th and 17th at the position. Like it, when you factor in, you know, injuries and lost time and things like that, like that wasn't like horrible. It was bad, but it wasn't as bad as I thought. It was interesting to see them at least finish like middle of the pack at the position.
And that's why I like this exercise. It really kind of brings things into light on what really happened. Like kind of takes biases out because it's just the numbers. This is what it was. And it kind of helps things like Marcus Semien, fifth second baseman off the board to pick 58, second in the player rater. And this is a guy that for like the first like 2 months of the season, everyone was writing off. Like this guy's horrible. Why did Texas sign him? And he finished with 26 homers and 25 stolen bases. Like he was outstanding and kind of shut everybody up. And I guess it goes also to show, as long as you're not playing head-to-head in a roto league, sometimes you're good players, you just roll the dice and trust them. And Semien made you feel a lot better by the end of it.
One home run and a sub-200 batting average, six steals. But that's what you were looking at with Marcus Semien through May, like through the first 2 months of the season. And then, hit six-plus homers in every other month after that with speed and that sort of thing. So quite the salvage. We say be aggressive and drop sometimes, but this was not the case. And I think there were whispers of kind of dropping Marcus Semien in shallower leagues just because he was doing absolutely nothing. But we say at HQ, practice excruciating patience. And sometimes it's not good to be too patient, but it definitely paid you off with Semien. 58 ADP. I think he'll go even higher next year. So.
Well, let's just have some fun with that for a second. If we look at this fancy, handy dandy draft board, where did Semien go?
He went in the early fourth round, so
before pick 58,
and that was mid August when we did this, and so Semien still kind of improved after that. So I could definitely see Semien being a third round pick, and I'd probably be fine with it next year.
Yep, no doubt about it. Javi Baez, like we said, you know, still 18th on the Raider, 17 homers, 9 steals. Yep. Somehow that didn't crush you. Like, I was devastated with him all year. Like, I've been a Baez guy through and through. It was a tough one. Part of me wants to be like, okay, that was year one of a contract, second year, he's going to be comfortable. I don't know. He looked more lost than lost out there at the plate. So that was a tough one. But then after Baez, we see a sea of red, Ryan. We have Jazz Chisholm, who was my dog, and I do not regret this pick still. 254, 14, and 12, and he got hurt. Like, he was on his way to a monster season. He's had injury concerns, though, so some people say that's kind of what you signed up for. Maybe. Then you have Brandon Lau, Jorge Polanco, Ketel Marte, Jonathan India. A lot of injuries in this mix that caused a lot of this, but still subpar performances from picks 7 through 11 at the second base position.
Yeah, and this was a big thing in draft season where if we think back to March and April, like second base was kind of deep up top, or so we thought, and then dropped off a cliff after like pick 100. There were a bunch of second basemen going basically at the same ADP, and those were the guys that you mentioned, this pocket of Baez, Chisholm, Brandon Lau, Polanco, Marte, India, Jose Altuve, and Tommy Edmund, kind of in that order, that's where they were going. And it was almost like there was debates on, you know, how do you order those guys? Which one do you take out of that? Basically, the answer was wrong for almost all of them. The only ones that worked out were Jose Altuve, who had a hell of a season, 328 home runs, 18 steals.
Like, 18 steals, that's the big shocker right there. He ran again.
I thought it was one or the other, either batting average or homers, and turns out it was both. So, like, Jose Altuve absolutely crushed it. The other one in that group that I and Bubba, you mentioned this. I mean, it is your boys, Chaz. It's Jazz Chisholm. Like, yeah. I still think. I mean, you need to take that end of season line and add on what you got from his replacement value.
Yeah.
And just a kind of I did sneak peek Chisholm's forecaster write up. It's quite rosy. So,
everything about his profile before he got hurt was just like breakout star. Like, everything was great. So, he's got to pray he's healthy, though. It's been a problem. It's been a problem for him. But,
it's been a problem. It's that age old, like, is that coin flip thing? Did he just land on tails 2 years in a row? Is it a kind of longer term issue? I don't think we know yet. I always lean on the side of just he's gotten unlucky a couple years in a row, and that's just what it is. We've seen plenty of examples of guys who have been injury prone early in their careers. Nelson Cruz always comes to mind, and then just became one of the more stable guys kind of later in his career. But I think it's just kind of that bad luck. But yeah, 14 homers, 12 steals, and 213 at bats for Jazz. Like, you don't want to prorate totally, but it's easy to see a 25-25 season next year. So,
yep, I'm on board. I'm on board.
That wasn't a miss. The other ones were misses. Like, man, Brandon Lau, Polanco, Marte, and India.
India was hurt a ton too, and I just took him. I just took him in our draft, in our degenerate draft.
And I took a second baseman as well, since our draft restarted on Monday. But yes, you did take Grissom, you took India in the 11th. So are you, obviously we're granting this a pass, injury pass, but what's the thinking there?
It's two things. It's the injury pass. He's young, you know, rookie of the year 2 years ago. The hit tool's still, I think, there. I'm going to factor the injury, and he's still in Great American Small Park. So come back healthy, hit towards the top of the order. I'm still good with him as long as he stays healthy. That's my two cents. Like, if we see him healthy in spring, he's not an 11th round pick at all. Not even close. Like, he moves right back up the board to at least, like, I would say a 6th or 7th, maybe. Maybe I'm overthinking it. But I think he's got legit upside in that regard that it was one of those. I'm looking at the draft board and it's like, okay, I could take a chance here on a guy like India and be okay with it. Even if he doesn't produce as well as I would hope, I could still survive it at round 11. I'd obviously want more, but that's my train of thought. I'm thinking bounce back. It was hamstring injuries, and that just requires time. And they just kept bringing him back. So give it time, let him heal, and hopefully he's just not Troy Tulowitzki, and we can go that direction, and we're okay. So
it's funny. That's, I have India's box for the forecaster. I wrote it up right before the podcast. So it's literally standing. It's right in front of me on my screen with my commentary filled out. And yeah, what I saw, like, the hamstring was never right. You had an IL stint in April. You had another IL stint in May. So he came back. It wasn't right. Went back on the IL. And then it recurred later again, I think in August. I don't think went on the IL for that, but again, like, he was playing with this all season, and it's the flip side. The one thing that I'll say on the flip side is, like, we don't have a super long track record of Jonathan India in the majors, at least. Like, the prospect pedigree was there, but all we really have for India is that 2021 season. And so I think the question is, like, how much, you know, will he rebound to that, or how close will he get to that 2021 season where he hit 21 homers, 12 steals, and hit 270. So I think that's kind of the key question, is how much does he bounce back, assuming he's healthy. It's fair. I don't have the answer, but it's an interesting one.
Yeah. So I'm taking the gamble. I'm taking the gamble on it and see what happens. But like you mentioned, Altuve, 3rd on the player radar, just a beast. Tommy Tanks, 4th. And that was a kind of a quieter second half, and he still put up amazing numbers: 32 steals, 13 32 home runs, bags. 265. You got Luis Garcia.
Ignore Luis Garcia. That is the pitcher ADP.
Wrong one. Yep.
So I threw this together a little bit too quick with everything else going on. It's all good. And I fell for the trap.
But you know what's impressive? Even though he had a .196 this year, Max Muncy finished 23rd. Like, not great, but not bad. We talked about him a lot. I even took a gamble and drafted him. As we talked about him last week, how I'd be kind of willing to take that chance. Right. I took him after I took India, or right before him, I think.
Right before. And I didn't realize that was you. Nice.
Yeah, so I'm again, he's got that eligibility, which in a DC is tremendous to me. So, that's a guy that I'm looking for. I don't – 196 is not Max Muncy. So, I'm there on him. We got Rake Cronenworth. Everyone likes to clown on him. Still finished 8th at second base on the player radar. You got McMahon at 14th. And then Gleyber Torres finished 7th with 24 homers and 10 stolen bases. So it's like you said, you take him early. There's the pocket of bad, but then there was 1, 2, 3. If you count Muncy, or not Luis Garcia, so 1, 2, 3, 4, like 6 or 7 straight really quality picks between 91 and 150. So that's a lot to say there at second base position.
Yeah, I mean, hindsight's everything, but this is where the value was. Second base was waiting until after pick 100. And this is kind of the – a little bit opposite of first base and third base that we talked about last week, where the market like completely nailed the beginning, though I did realize I didn't put Chris Bryant in there for whatever reason. But the market did nail the beginning of first base and third base, those early rounds, and then it went kind of hollow, whereas second base, and we'll talk about shortstop next, but similar path. If you waited till like the ninth, 10th round and 15 teamers, you got one of these guys. You got your Cronenworth, McMahon, Glaber. You got Tommy Edman at 100. You got Altuve at 90. Like, that really worked out. So if you did play it where you got your corners early and waited a little bit in middle infield, that worked out for you. Now, I mean, is that going to be the trend next season? I don't know, but it's interesting to at least see how that played out. And if you played it right, you crushed it. If you started with Albies and then waited on corner infield, you weren't collecting a paycheck.
Raise my hand on that one. That was this guy. But so we get through that round. You got Chris Taylor, DJ LeMahieu, guys that were hurt all season. So they kind of 31st and 24th in the player rating. But then Colton Wong, and that was even with some injuries, 15 homers, 17 steals. I was pounding the Colton Wong bandwagon all preseason based on his draft value. I was writing about it. I was talking about how good he is, especially leading off from Milwaukee. That came through. Ty France, even with some injuries, 276, 20 home runs, and some nice eligibility. And then Brendan Rodgers wasn't horrible. And he was injured a lot. So a lot of injuries here in this spot, but you still had Wong, France, and Rodgers that didn't crush you from picks 180 to 189.
Yep. And yeah, Colton Wong, it's interesting. I actually went back and forth. So I took Vaughn Grissom in the 12th round of our degenerate draft a couple hours ago. Thought hard about Colton Wong. I feel like he kind of went under the radar this season in Milwaukee, but hit, I think, first or second most of the time, 430 at bats, but I mean, went 15 homers, 17 steals with a 250 batting average. Like, that is damn good in 430 at bats. So like, he's 31 next year, will be his age 32 season, but I feel like Colton Wong's not getting talked about that much. And in terms of five category production, like, that's pretty solid.
Yep, I'm with you. And then just some other guys that kind of stood out as productive. Eduardo Escobar, pick 219, 20 homers, no steals was okay. But Andrés Giménez at 234, sixth on the player rater, 297, 17, and 20 was awesome. Jeff McNeil kind of had a rebirth. Only 9 homers and 4 steals, but hit 326, 10th on the player rater. You had Josh Rojas, we've talked about. Luis Urias, who was there, and Brandon Drury, guys we talked about last week. But that Andrés Giménez one is one that's going to be a fun topic of conversation all off season, because it was like a season or two ago, we all were thinking this is what he was, and then he couldn't even keep a job in the majors. And then even this year kind of wasn't great out the gate, got it going in the minors again, came back and was just a beast. So he's going to skyrocket quite a bit come draft season.
He is. And so I had Giménez's box as well. I'm working too hard on this forecaster thing. But no, forecaster is all alphabetical. So anybody who's like a G or right around there is probably one of my guys. Two things can be true at the same time with Andrés Giménez. Like, he probably had his career year last year. I don't see him, even that's kind of weird to say for someone who I think is 24 years old. But that's more common than not to have your career year kind of early in your career. That can be true, but it can also be a pretty skill-supported step forward. And so Giménez, like, I think he's a little bit over his skis in terms of the batting average. He hit 297 this year. I think he's more like a 270 guy with maybe 15 homers, 15 steals. But that's awful. That's awful productive. The only thing, so I kind of list that line out, and I just talked about Colton Wong. Like, I wonder if you can get, like, Wong is a cheaper Andrés Giménez later.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because Giménez went round 6 in our draft. Like, and he's going up.
Yeah, and Wong's still on the board.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the same thing that happened last year. So I said, like, I was writing articles. Like, it was Tommy Edman and Colton Wong were going, like, over 100 picks apart at one point when I was writing my article. And I'm like, I get Tommy Edman's appeal, but Colton Wong, we saw 15-17, and he only played 400 at-bats. What if he stayed healthy? Like, we're talking 2020, 100 picks later, that's a game-changer, depending on what you took at pick 100. So it's like the little things like that, when I like, at least when I – like, I know we all do it with our content, but it's not always the equal stat line. It's what do you get when you flip those picks also. And that's what that's the whole point of comparing like a Wong versus Nedmin. It's like, yes, Nedmin finished probably better than Wong. We've established that. But what you would have picked at Nedmin compared to what you picked at Wong, now tell me that difference as well. And then that's where it gets interesting.
Yeah, so, and the opportunity cost. What else is available to you at those spots? And
exactly.
Yeah.
So, and that's the kind of research I like to do. Maybe it's not the most efficient to become a very good player, but I like to try to find those kind of opportunity cost plays, and then you can kind of navigate elsewhere. That's what I usually do most of draft season. And Wong just stood out in a big way. And by the looks of things right now, he's going to stand out again for me because I think he still is very good. Like you said, he's only 32. Like I think he's going to be just fine. So yeah, I have a feeling we'll be talking more Colton Wong as things go on. Second base. The ADP, we talked about that. You had a note there about outside of Trey Turner. We kind of talked about that. Yeah. Who was your most targeted second baseman, good or bad, for you this year?
Most targeted. Who do I have the most of?
Everybody should know mine already, so this is easy.
I unfortunately want to say, yes, I think it's just on a couple teams, but I think it was Javi Baez.
I have a lot of bias. I won't deny that. But my main dude, I feel bad because I'm not wearing a shirt tonight. I have my Jazz Chisholm shirt. I should have worn it tonight. What a bad, bad fan I am. But
you have a Jazz shirt?
Yeah, from the Roto
Wear.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh yeah, it's like I'll wear it at first pitch. It's a great shirt, but it's don't know baseball, you probably have no like what's this guy wearing type shirt. So I don't wear it in a ton of places. But at first pitch Arizona, everyone will know what's going on.
Everyone will get it.
Yeah, so I love Jazz, and we just already talked about it. I'll be back in. I'm not afraid of him. And our draft was back in. He went, I think it was round three. I got the board right here. Yeah, he went round three. He went three picks after Albies. He was the third second baseman off the board. So that was our buddy Rob DiPietro. So
took him.
Yeah, the Chisholm love is going to be there again and in full swing. And we both kind of sound like we agree, rightfully so. So. Go get some right there. And my comparison to Chisholm last year was, why draft Bo Bichette in round one when you can draft Jazz Chisholm four rounds later? That was my comparison. And I was looking really smart there for a while.
I made a note about Bichette. We'll get to Bichette in just a sec. I'm looking at that third round, and I took Starling Marte two picks before Jazz, kind of regretting that a little bit. But anyway. One guy we haven't talked about, and I don't know, Razzball Player Raider has him 21st finishing. So much of that depends on how much their algorithm or whatever is valuing stolen bases. But John Birdie, like tip of the cap, if we're reviewing second base, I know he played, where else was he? He was outfield. He was third base.
Looks
like he
picked up
maybe in season at shortstop too. Jeez. But tip of the cap to that guy, man. 41 bags, 18 in June.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. In NFBC, shortstop, outfield, second base, third base.
Wow.
That's valuable, folks, especially to draft champions. Like, I don't know if he's going to get you what he got you this year, but we know he can. We know he can. It's not out of question. But my goodness. And he went, he's off the board in ours. He went, I think, in round.
I think he's still available.
He is. Okay. I thought he was taken.
And we're at pick one. We're in the 13th round, pick 189. So,
That's about right. That's about right because you don't know if he's starting still. That's the fun part.
You don't know if he's starting. Birdie kind of felt, which honestly to me isn't that big of a deal. And we talked about this way back when we were talking about Fab during the season. Like, that's almost a feature because it keeps the price down. I mean, Birdie plays so much that someone's going to get hurt and he's going to play. So it's not so much like that. It's more like the dude is 32 years old. He's never stolen more than 17 bases in a major league season.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And you look at the second half, John Birdie hit 216. Still had the 16 steals, but hit 216 with 10 RBI in the second half. So like some of that he was hurt, but that's 194 at bats. But like there was a pretty steep drop off for Birdie. First half, just for comparison's sake, had hit 268 with 25 stolen bases. So I don't know. The track record, the kind of second half fade, I'm not going super early on him, but like in this draft, if he's mid-teens.
Well, there's that. There's the drop off he had, and then there's the other thing, which is tough to like predict ever, but I know it's a topic of conversation. They're gonna have new coaches, new manager. So what's the philosophy?
Right.
Like you think you're gonna let Birdie run. Why else wouldn't you let Birdie run? Let's just be real. But you know, some managers are just weird. So I'm just gonna throw it out there. You never know who they bring in. I think it'll probably be somebody young that's cheap, that likes it. That's my guess. That's the Marlins way. But we'll have to kind of wait and see there.
And we might also, I'm not totally sold that this will happen, but there is a prevailing thought that with the rule changes, with the pitch clock and bigger bases and that sort of thing, that more players are going to steal, and thus perhaps your 41 steals from John Birdie are not as valuable as they would have been in 2022. I don't know if that theory is correct or not yet. I need to look into it a little bit more, but that's also something that's at play with taking these kind of stolen base only guys early in draft season. It's kind of like they were going to run anyway, with rules or not. Is the rest of the league catching up to them? Theoretically, I'm going to lower their value. I'm not sure, but it's something to think about.
Yeah, it's the fun question that it's already getting talked about a ton. Do stolen bases kind of even out, flatten out kind of idea? Like do the elite guys, like you're saying, aren't as elite anymore? And also the shift conversation is all over the board. So there's a lot of those fun ones that's going to change things as the draft seasons go on, and people get really bored when there's no baseball to dig into stats that might be completely meaningless when things are all said and done, but it'll be some fun conversation for sure.
Fun all in right, quotes, and not as yes. fun.
Exactly. Like, I really don't plan on digging in on any of it, but we'll see what happens. Who is your biggest regret, potentially, I guess, not drafting at second base?
Biggest regret not drafting, besides I would Chaz say, Chisholm,
of course.
Of course. Besides Chaz, I would say Altuve and Edmonds.
Yeah, that stands out like a sore thumb, Altuve.
Like, yeah, the production you got from those guys in the sixth or seventh round of a 15 teamer is just wild. I know there was a lot of talk about Edmonds like hitting ninth in spring training at the end and that sort of thing, but that was my regret. I don't think I got either of those two guys.
Yeah, no Altuve for me. I was fading Edmund because, like I said, like I thought I could get Wong or someone later that would give me some good production, and they did. But, yeah, no Edmund. But Altuve was a guy that I'm kind of bummed at, because a lot of us even said it, like, hey, in like round 9 or 10, you got this guy with a solid bat and average will score runs, hitting some power. But I don't think anybody expected the stolen bases. And that was just like an elite game changer for him, because otherwise his stat line is just like a little better type France if he doesn't steal again. But no, he stole, and that changed everything. So we'll wait and see how that goes in 2023. Let's go to shortstop. Shortstop position now. This is a fun one. Trey Turner, of course, leads the way, as we mentioned earlier. But the aforementioned Bo Bichette was the fifth player off the board at shortstop, and fifth overall player off the board, and he was the fifth in the Razzball Player Raider at shortstop, finishing with a .290 average, 24 homers and 13 stolen bases. And if you just read Twitter, you would think Bo Bichette had the worst season alive at one point in time. He finished really strong, yes, but there was a section of the year where people were like, wow, what's wrong with Bo Bichette? You probably wanted more than 24-13 at pick 5, but as we've said that this exercise shows you, he didn't kill you. And so I think that's the moral of the story here.
Yeah, he was fine. He was absolutely fine. The only things that in Bichette's, not like his corner, but we had a couple episodes about what's happened since football started. Bo Bichette taking off is one of those things that happened since football started. So Bo Bichette in September hit .403 with 7 home runs and 3 stolen bases. So like on the one hand, he probably won you some leagues, especially head-to-head postseason playoff type formats like that. That was huge. On the other hand, if you drafted Bo Bichette and your team was kind of out of it by September, that September production didn't really matter for you. I know it all counts the same. That September production is the same as it was in April. But a lot of teams that had him probably out of the running at that point. But I took Bo Bichette fifth overall in labor mixed. And yes, like you said, Bubba, it's not the production that you like want out of that spot. But I mean, at HQ is still like a $30 player. I honestly, 100%. Like if you said, would I make that pick again? Like, it's not the pick, but I wouldn't hate it. I mean, he did have, so like, I mean, the other big thing was the counting stats, 91 runs, 93 RBI for Bo Bichette. So like a good year. He made up for it with a yep. really strong finish.
Yeah. And of course, Steve Weimer got him in round three in our draft somehow. I have no clue how.
And I remember the whole room was like, oh, and that was before September.
Yeah. It was crazy so, talk. So yeah, no, I'm with you. I think he's still a very, very valuable high pick. You won't see him in round three in any draft the rest of the year. Any 15 teamer, I will put money on that right now. Like, you are not going to see that. If you do, it's because someone literally heard this podcast and wants me to pay money. That's the only reason why it's happening. He will not be going in round three any other time.
I think he's back end first round, back wheel.
Yeah, he should be. I think once people kind of get the 2022 taste out of their mouth and realize things like that, he's moving right back up. No doubt about it. The third shortstop off the board, pick 27, was Tim Anderson, 36 on their player radar, hit .301, 6 homers, 13 stolen bases. And the thing I want to bring up with Tim Anderson, because I know we both did. We both had our fair shares of Tim Anderson. Like, I know that for a fact. And the average is never a joke. 301, 309, 322, 355. We know there's power. We know there's speed. The problem, Ryan, and this is where I'm having a really tough time, and I know it's only October 19th, and we really haven't dug in a lot, but 79 games, 123, 49, 123. That's his last four seasons. And then it was 153 and 146, which you can at least kind of stomach. But the last four seasons, he hasn't played more than 123 games, and we're taking like a third-round pick on him. That's getting harder to stomach going forward.
Yeah, and the other number that's important too is 30. I mean, that's how old he's going to be next year. Yep. Tim Anderson, a lot of his game is based on speed, not only speed, but also having a high BABIP, an insanely high BABIP. Those things tend to erode quicker than power as you get into your 30s. So, yeah, definitely. Like you said, I had a lot of Tim Anderson, a little regret with that pick. I think the process was fine with it. Yeah. But yeah, only played half the year again. And only 6 home runs, like, that kind of not ideal. 6 home runs
not for Mr. Baffler.
32 at bats.
No, like, I could have stomached, like, if he had somehow got like 13-13, he'd probably be like 13th on the player rating. I'm like, well, it wasn't great, but I survived. Like, just not doing anything stung tremendously. So, yeah, it's going to take a lot for me to get back on that train. Like, we talked about regrets and things we need to do better in the future. And I think just kind of already looking through the first two sets of positions, like Tim Anderson, Jazz Chisholm is kind of a tougher one, but just looking at Tim Anderson's last 4 years, like even before his last 3 years, he's not playing a lot. Why am I taking an early pick? Why am I taking that kind of a risk early on? Like, I know it sounds like you said hindsight, it's 2020, but those are things you can still look at and kind of like weigh out some things a little differently potentially. And you miss on some that all of a sudden have a full year, but at the same time, trends are trends eventually. And we've seen it with a lot of these players. And you said he gets older, it's one of those things. So it's a Captain Hindsight thing, but we'll see how that one keeps playing out. Trevor Story, he was third at he was a third overall at second base, fourth overall at shortstop, 24th on the shortstop player rater. So we kind of know that, 17th at second base. So I guess it shows you the depths of the position if you want to.
Yep, great point. That's something that absolutely came, it kind of popped off the page for me. Trevor Story was the 17th ranked second baseman. And same stat line, 24th ranked shortstop. So you hear all the time, shortstop is deep. You can wait on shortstop. Yeah, it's kind of true.
And then, like, Bobby Witt Jr., this is where it gets fun now when we look back on things. And he was awesome. Don't get me wrong, 254, 2030. Like, not many guys have ever done in their career, let alone the rookie season. He was 51st off the board, 6th on the player rater. He went 14th overall in our draft, and like I said earlier, Bo Bichette was in the third round. So this is where the early drafts are looking. It's crazy. Witt is still very good. I have no problem with him going in the first round. I think this is who he is, and he might even be better. because he had a little growing pains early on, and then he got going, and he kind of stumbled towards the end. He might be better than 254, 2030. So, like, there might be another level to Bobby Witt. So how are you looking at Bobby Witt? Like, obviously, this isn't a 2023 pod, but we can talk about it for a second. He went 14th, and like I said, Bichette, we already both agree, is not a third-round pick. But how do you, like, kind of separate those two, like, at a first glance?
I mean, if you're, like, asking me for which one I'd take, I'd probably go Bichette just because that's the way I draft. Like, it's... Yeah, it's just track record and safety. That's me. That's the HQ way. So I'm on brand with that. But like Bobby Witt, and one of the things I really like to look with rookies is kind of those in-season splits and what Bobby Witt did once there was a book out on him in the majors. Second half increased his contact rate from 73% to 81%. So struck out a lot less in the second half. Yeah, it's fantastic. And he stole 18 bases in the second half to just 12 in the first half. So the second half improvement for me, yeah, the power wasn't as much there, but you know, this is a 22-year-old kid and it was first time in the majors. Like that's another huge thing I'm leaving out. It's like, you can't, I mean, there could very well be another level here to Bobby Witt, but just the fact that he was able to adjust to the adjustments and improve that K rate, still run in the second half and hit 272, bodes really well long-term. So I've got no problem. I think a little bit better, at least right now, a little bit better roto player, fantasy player than real life player, just because of the bags, like still had a sub 300 OBP. So maybe in points leagues, I'm not as excited about Bobby Witt, at least for 2023 only, but the steals, man, the steals stick out so much.
Yeah, shortstop, third base, too. It's a big one. Big one with Bobby Witt. And then to wrap out the top six, I kind of, you know, hid the gems here. But in the top six at shortstop, four of the top six finished top six in the player rater, which tells you that a nice top-heavy, solid approach. Francisco Lindor was that sixth guy, finished third in the player rater, hitting 270, 26, and 16. I'm not expecting Javi Baez to do this, but this is kind of the idea of second year now. He got comfortable in New York, looked a lot more like the Lindor of old. And I think it's kind of, I don't know if it's safe to say, but we got a guy that's back to being Frenchy, which I like to see. So he had a good year, and then you have Mondesi. Did you have any shares of Mondesi this year? Did you have any shares of Mondesi?
Like, I had one. Cone of shame. I think my first ever Mondesi share. I took him in a DC, first pitch Arizona Speakers draft in the sixth round. I was like, man, sixth round. All right, I'll finally pull the trigger and
Not so much. But then we got some more solid performances. Bogaerts 12th in the play rater, Marcus Semien 4th, 2nd at second base, 4th at shortstop. And Xander's a throwing, so we don't know where he's going to be, but I guess it shows you how much the play rater values batting average, because he only had 15 homers and 8 steals, but 307, obviously runs and RBIs are good too. But for the three main stats we're looking at, the batting average pretty much, I think, sealed it for Xander, and that's kind of been a forte for him. And I think 8 stolen bases, honestly, was more than most of us expected. So in the end, it was probably a win, but I think he wanted more than 15 homers.
Yeah, he wanted more than 15, but yeah, player raters definitely hyping up that average. The other big thing, and this gets underrated a lot when talking about batting average, is the volume associated with it. So you can hit 300 if it's only 250 at-bats of it. Doesn't make as much of a difference as Xander Bogaerts is 557 at bats of a 306. Like that combination of batting average and that many at bats of it is massive.
And now we we reach our first little skid mark of this deal. 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th shortstop off the board, 68 through 83. Baez, 26 on the Raider. Wander Franco, 39th. Jazz Chisholm, 34th. Jorge Polanco, 33rd. Now, two of those names we heard at second base, so that makes sense. Or three of them did. We did. Those are a trend. But Wander Franco obviously was hurt a lot. I'm not going to like just pretend he had a horrible season because he played bad. He hit 277, 6 homers, 8 stolen bases. But I was anti-Franco going into last season. He just hasn't shown it. Like, again, probably a better real-life player than roto player to me.
Agreed. I mean, it was the home run stolen base ceiling for me that I think is, at least right now, really low on Wander Franco. And yes, injuries, that sort of thing, partial season, but still, like you said, 6 homers, 8 stolen bases and 314 at bats. You prorate that out to like 500 and it's still not all that great. So I know it's like super lazy to say this and interested to see where that ADP ends up next year. But with Franco, like I really am, because you now have kind of two half seasons of really not much in the majors. It's going to pop at some time, but how confident is the market going to be that it happens in 2023? I'm pretty sure I will be lower on Franco than the market, and probably won't have him this year.
And now it gets really fun, Ryan, because from 14th to 21 at the shortstop position,
yeah,
it's a green road. And we talked about value, man, at second base. And I think we knew shortstop had value because we knew it was deep. But at the same time, you wanted a high-end shortstop because they were like five category studs. And that's what you wanted. But my goodness, Corey Seager, 245, 33 bombs, 3 steals. Tommy Edman, we talked about him. Carlos Correa, 291 and 22. But here's the big boys. Dansby Swanson, 277, 25 and 18. And again, same thing happened in 2021. And one reason I always loved Dansby, but there was always questions, is when Ozzie Albies is healthy, Dansby gets to the bottom of the order. When Ozzie Albies isn't healthy, Dansby gets at the top and he crushes. Now that's something to monitor going forward. What do the Braves finally do? Can they just leave him in a productive spot? But here is the one that I know it helped the guilds win a ton and probably many others. Willy Adames. And then Swanson and Adames went 3 picks apart. Swanson was second on the play radar. Adames 7th. Adames 238, 31 and 8. Absolute beast. He had Cronenworth. Ahmed Rosario had a strong season. And then Gleyber Torres, that we talked about earlier. So this section, you had 1, 2, 3, 4 in the top 9 overall. And if you want to say 6 in the top 13, picked from 93 to 152.
A lot of folks waited on shortstop kind of for this reason. It's a deeper position. There's really, with this group of names that you just rattled off, there's different like shapes to that production too. You've got the kind of low stolen base guys in Seager and Correa that get you either power or average. You've got the stolen base guys in like Ahmed Rosario, who I had a lot of, Edmund. And then you had Dansby doing that was just not a league winner, not any single player's a league winner, either two or three guys in baseball. But that was just huge. And Willy Adames, I know we've talked about him a little bit, but kind of gets, maybe it's something, I don't know, maybe it's something in Milwaukee just does not get the pub that he deserves. So teammate Colton Wong and Willy Adames, I guess we're going to keep hush hush, but both guys were super productive up the middle for Milwaukee this year.
And the only other really green spots the rest of the way, Andrés Giménez, 10th on the play radar. We talked about him already. Eugenio Suarez, who we talked about at third base last week, was 14th at shortstop, which is pretty impressive. Jeremy Pena, 253, 22, and 11. And he kind of had some rough patches in the middle of the season, but he still finished 18th. Jorge Mateo finished 19th with 221, 13, and 35. And then Josh Rojas as well. So, and then Thairo Estrada down there, who basically almost went undrafted in most leagues, finished 15th on the player rater. So any other thoughts on the bottom half here, which there's always some random, you know, bright spots you'll find, but that mid section at shortstop was tremendous.
Yep. That was the answer. That was the place to shop. Thairo Estrada, that is a name, and that's the benefit of doing these reviews. You probably noticed this, Bubba, but like, I did not know my man had 14 homers and 21 steals.
Yeah, I'm kind of mad we're talking about him right now. That's all I'm going to say.
It's if anyone, I guess, is in our DC listening to this.
Because he's buried at ADP like 606 on that board.
Wow. We are next to each other in the draft.
Yeah, so I will, I know. Not, that's why I'm not happy.
I will not take him. I can't do that. I did the Dustin May thing. I can't do the Thairo Estrada. But like, man, that's an out of nowhere age 26 breakout. Well, I mean, what do you think about him for? I mean, that, because that begs the question. Like, it came out of nowhere, no track record. Like, what do you do with him next year? Obviously, you haven't taken him yet in the draft in 13 rounds, but
I've been close. He's in the queue. Yeah, he's in the queue. It's been close. The track record, like you said, hasn't been there, but it's kind of been one of those where I want to say like you could see it coming, but like he always had a hit tool. Just the power speed combo was kind of questionable. Like, there's more speed than power, but the average was kind of pretty serviceable throughout the minor leagues. I think it was last year. DVR and Eno were looking at minor league Statcast data, and his was like popping off the boards in the minors. And it was one of those like things that transitioned okay to the bigs. He just didn't play enough last year. Well, now he got to play every day. And the Giants are old and the Giants like the platoon. And I don't see how you keep Thyro out of the lineup after what you saw this year. That's my two cents. I think he'll be very good. At the same time, would I be shocked if he takes a pretty good step back? No, I wouldn't, because we've only seen it once. And that's the hard part with this. But where you're paying to draft him, I think he's worth the gamble. I just don't know what his exact price should be. And that's why I kind of keep playing chicken, and I'll probably lose at some point in time. But I'm really close to wanting to do it, because the other reason why I like Thyro, if we want to get really goofy come draft season, is he is outfield, second base, shortstop. So outfield, middle, infield is a nice little ring to it as well. So that's, I think there's a lot to like there. Yeah, I think there's a lot to like there, but honestly, he's one of those guys I wouldn't be shocked if he stepped back. But again, the price is right. So like we're almost at pick 200. So you're getting to that point anyways. So it's tough.
It's definitely weird to see a giant have that many steals. Maybe I'm just like missing guys, but
it's true. It's true. They don't. They
usually
don't
run. It's weird to see that.
So. Yeah, this last year was a weird year all around, to be honest. But maybe that's the new philosophy. You'll have to wait and see. Who was one of your most targeted shortstops, good or bad?
I was all aboard. So basically, common theme, the most targeted guys in the last two episodes have all kind of sucked. Thus, our Taking Our L's episode a couple weeks ago. This one wasn't, so I was all over Ahmed Rosario. In the forecaster last year, I remember we put an upside of 300 with 30 stolen bases on him. Didn't reach that. I mean, that's kind of not the point of those upside projections in the forecaster. It's more just to kind of raise your eyes as to what could happen if things break the right way. But we got a fair amount of pushback from that. I think Rosario was a pretty polarizing guy. Ended up 283, 11 homers, 18 steals out of a 142 ADP. So, and like played the entire season. So he was just set and forget all year, and someone who I had a lot of and really liked what I saw in it, you know, in the forecaster and in draft season. It came to fruition throughout the year.
Yeah. I like that one. There's a lot of pushback because I wasn't all in, but I liked him, and people were like, oh, he can't do this. I'm like, eh, yeah, I don't know. I think he's better than you think. For me, I've been Team Dansby for a couple of years. And like I said, I pound the drum, but the question is, where does he hit in the order? Like, it's a clear split. Mike Curlin, he follows lineups, and he's pointed it out to me many times. That's why he's kind of been anti-Dansby a bit, but I kept sticking to my guns, and it worked out pretty well, I'd say. So it was, and he was always like a middle infield option because where he's getting drafted. If I took a Trey Turner or a Chisholm or whatever, like he wasn't even the main dude at first. If you think about it, that'll change this year, of course. But Dansby was one for me for sure. Who's one of your biggest regrets at shortstop?
It was Dansby. Because it's weird. Like, you can be high in guys and just not draft them. Maybe I just took Rosario. Like, so, and it's kind of funny. Maybe like the guy I targeted the most, Rosario, who was going just one round after Dansby, is kind of the reason why I didn't get more Dansby. So, Dansby Swanson, biggest regret. Going to be super interesting. I believe he's a free agent.
Yes, he is.
Next season.
Yes,
next
he is. Season, he's so. One of the few young players they did not re-sign. So go
throw that one out there. That's true. That's true.
Good chance. So good chance he's not back in Atlanta is what's going to happen.
Yeah. We'll see. Who knows? It's so hard to predict. I mean, if anything, Atlanta does have some room for a bigger contract, but you're right. Like, that has not been their MO. And maybe that's what's causing, so like, not to make this about my teams or whatever, but like I said, I took Von Grissom in the 12th round, which I thought was really pretty good. I think he's got a decent 2020 ceiling with everyday playing time in 2023. Definitely. But the risk with that is if Atlanta does re-sign Dansby Swanson, Grissom doesn't have anywhere to play. So it'll be interesting. Dansby, definitely. Everyone talks about Judge betting on himself and that sort of thing.
Yep.
I mean, I guess Dansby didn't have that option, but picked a heck of a time to break out.
Most definitely. My biggest regret was Lindor. I was anti-Lindor all draft season, and he proved me wrong. Like, it wasn't a killer because the other things worked out at shortstop, but yeah, that was one of those that I could have probably changed my drafts up a bit by going that direction. So Frenchie, Lindor would be one for me.
So one thing I'll ask you real quick, just so you mentioned with Lindor earlier, second year with the Mets. What do you think about Baez for next year? Second year with Detroit. Yeah, high expectations, I kind of hit it at it earlier.
It's like, yeah, if he's going to be going this late in drafts, I'm probably going to jump in because I still think he's that talented. And he's got such a weird approach that he could still bust out at any time, and now you're not paying a premium for him. Like, I still think there's talent in that bat. It's just, it's Detroit. There is a big swing and miss there. Like, there's a lot of questions, but you're not paying the premium anymore. And second year in Detroit, I am more intrigued, yes.
Still available in the 13th of our league. Yeah. So
go for it. It's all yours. All right, let's do a couple listener questions as you guys came through for us tonight. This is a big one here. We'll start off with Nick Bird, who says, who is your favorite buy low in dynasty leagues for both shortstop and second base?
So I'm not going to go like too much into the prospect side of things just because that's not my forte, and I'm not going to pretend I know what I'm doing with that. So I'm more looking at younger second basemen who have had time in the majors, who have shown something in the majors, but are just coming off down years. And for me, I'm going to go Brandon Lau. Hit 221, 8 homers, injuries, all that sort of thing. I think it was just kind of a lost season for Brandon Lau. And so I think how old is he? I think he's still super young, like 25, 26. And in Dynasty, I think that's kind of that's, well, he's 28. But I still think he's young enough to turn it around. And in Dynasty, I think that's like kind of the pocket where you want to kind of buy low and take those rebound guys in the majors. So I'll go Brandon Lau.
Yeah, for me, I think you can get a little bit of a discount right now for a 22-year-old CJ Abrams. That'd be a guy I'd look at. There was a big prospect pedigree there. He's in Washington, change of scenery, everyday playing time. I'd be willing to take a chance on him. That'd be a guy I'd look at for sure.
Like that.
John Dobo says, hey guys, Brendan Rodgers or Thyro Estrada 5x5 Dynasty? I kind of want to say Brendan Rodgers because of Coors Field still. But Thyro was good. Thyro was good. I just think Brendan Rodgers has the pedigree to be better.
I'm going to go Thyro. I don't know. Maybe I'm lower. I'm obviously lower on Rodgers than you. Maybe I'm too low on Rodgers. But, like, and I know he's had some injuries that have kind of shortened the beginning of his major league career, but hasn't really shown much of anything in the majors. I mean, 13 home runs and 527 at-bats. Like, Brendan Rodgers had a pretty extended sample in 2023, only missed 11 days on the IL with a hamstring injury and did not much with it. Didn't steal a single base. So, like, I just feel like there's a lot more Brendan Rodgers types that you can, especially in keeper and dynasty, that you can kind of supplement in supplemental drafts or on waivers, whereas like a Thyro, where if you are getting 20 bags with some pop and batting average, I'd rather go that direction, fully aware that Rodgers could break out at some point and prove me wrong and do like a Charlie Blackman type of thing. But I think chances are low.
I think you sold me. I think Thyro might be worth the risk there as well. Mid's projection system says, is drafting Polanco or Seager non-stolen base sources at middle infield going to be a trap or a value in your estimation? Seems like they'll project as a value ADP again wherever they settle, but you'll need to reverse engineer the speed into your team. Well, Polanco was not productive this past year. Seager finished very high on the player rater. I usually still avoid both. That's just my personal preference, but I could see at least some Seager appeal if you need to. What do you have there?
Really good question, because I really like the way you framed it, because it can be both a trap and a value. So, like, we talked about this on the corner infield pod last week, that there is just at third base, there's no stolen bases outside of like Birdie, J-Ram, and Witt. At first base, I think like Freddie Freeman had the most steals at like 13 steals. There's just no steals at corner infield. So if you don't get steals at corner infield and you take a Corey Seager type in the middle infield, where are you getting your steals? You're kind of pigeonholing yourself into a certain type of player in the outfield that you need to go to make up for that. Or you go with like a JTR Varsho type of thing at catcher. So that's where, like, that is where drafting a low stolen base guy in the middle infield can set you back. You have to have a plan. That said, like, where it can be a value is Corey Seager was like vastly underrated last year, in my opinion. Like, it was going way too late in drafts.
Yeah.
33 homers finished, like you said, Bubba, finished ninth in shortstops. Like, from an actual valuation standpoint, that was a no-brainer. You just have to have a plan for other positions for how you're going to get your bags.
All right. It's all about team construction, the old adage, team construction. We have to rapid fire these because I have to run here shortly. Nate Curtis, Seager or India?
I'll go Seager.
I'm going to go India because I'm biased after today. Little Book of Calm says, last year, Albies was an early second round pick before struggling and then being hurt. Any reason not to completely throw out his 2022? I'd be happy to take his age 26 at any discount in the market. I'd say yes, because I did. I did already.
Yep, you took him in the draft, I think, third round. Yep, so
third round.
I would throw it away too. Injury, age, yep. He's got the track record.
Ballpark, everything you want.
Yep.
Yeah. And last but not least, Greg Kelly says, curious where Jorge Mateo figures in. That's a tough one. We always knew the speed was there. Power was great. Can he do it again? I'm torn on him, to be honest. I need to dig in on it more. But what are your thoughts on Mateo?
I do. I don't want to lead astray. I just think with Mateo, like, there's such a risk, especially because Baltimore is like good now and contending for the postseason. There's a risk that they don't just let Mateo run wild. I mean, dude had a 267 OBP. He's very much at risk of losing playing time, which makes him kind of useless. So I'm probably not taking Mateo anywhere in an even semi-early round next season.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I looked at him a couple of times in our draft, and I just kind of passed. I was like, nope, not going to take that risk right now. Yeah. I'm already struggling in that draft to begin with. Any final thoughts at shortstop and second base before I wrap up another fun look back and kind of like, wow, this is how it really turned out this year. As again, early rounds, middle rounds, loaded at the middle infield.
Yep. That was the path this year, to kind of wait middle infield, get your bags there, and take corner infield early. So, enjoying these so far. We'll probably do outfield next week, and I don't know, after that it'll be first pitch, so we'll probably take a week off, but we'll prep for outfield and then prep for our live show the week after. Man,
that'll be a blast. Hitting some golf balls, all that fun stuff, watching live baseball, drinking beers. It's going to be a great time in Arizona, but we'll keep it coming for you here to recap 2022 and get you ready for 2023, because it's already draft season, folks. So if you have any questions, hit us up on Twitter. Again, leave us questions for the show. We appreciate it. Check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ and get ready for that big, big forecaster that they're cranking out over there. I'm on Twitter at BDIntric, and thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you guys next time.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price, and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.